Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On June 30th, Robert Wilkie was sworn in as the fourth VA secretary in 5 years. He is taking over a department in turmoil. Last week, ProPublica published an explosive investigation called The Shadow Rulers of the VA. It focuses on three members of Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago Club who are secretly shaping the administration's veterans policies. None of them has ever served in the military or the government, and Democrats say they will investigate as a result of this investigation. Media reports have exposed problems at the VA for years. Documents show long wait times and huge patient backlogs began under George W. Bush. So what is the situation like today? As of July 1st, 700,000 veterans were waiting longer than a month for appointments. 76,000 were waiting more than 6 months. That's according to the VA Inspector General. So why do these problems continue? What will it take to reform the VA and get veterans the care they need? Today, we're joined by Aaron Glantz, senior reporter with Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting. He's also author of three books, including his most recent, The War Comes Home, Washington's Battle Against America's Veterans. And Aaron Glantz joins us in San Francisco. Hi, Aaron. Welcome back to the show.
It's good to be with you.
It's great to have you. We're also joined by Isaac Arnsdorf. Isaac is a reporter with ProPublica covering national politics, and he is the journalist who wrote the investigation, The Shadow Rulers of the VA. Hi, Isaac. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you. And I know we have about 10 minutes with you, so let's dive in and talk about your piece. It reveals the influence over VA policy exercised by three men. Bruce Moskowitz, a Palm Beach doctor who helps wealthy people obtain high service, quote, concierge medical care. Ike Perlmutter, the chair of Marvel Entertainment, a longtime acquaintance of Donald Trump, and then Mark Sherman, a lawyer. And they are all members of Trump's Mar-a-Lago Club, and as you report, they're known internally as the Mar-a-Lago crowd. You report that they lean on VA officials and they steer policy affecting millions of Americans. Now, you got your hands on hundreds of documents that you obtained through the Freedom of Information Act. You also interviewed a number of former administration officials. Isaac, what did you learn about these three guys and what kind of influence they have on the VA?
Well, for the past year and a half, they've been acting as like a shadow leadership, and the VA officials have been having to fly down to Mar-a-Lago to meet with them and run things by them and get their approval on policy and personnel decisions. And there really isn't a precedent in modern presidential history for anything like that. I mean, obviously, presidents have friends who they talk to outside the government, but to have people who are not government officials sort of assigned to a particular agency to be reviewing what that agency does without anyone really knowing about it outside of a few people in the agency who were dealing with them is really unprecedented.
How did you first learn about this?
Well, because a few VA officials were making these trips and were having these conversations, there were a few whispers around Washington that there are some secret meetings in Mar-a-Lago, but no one really knew what the details were, and so eventually I started to figure out, well, there was Ike Perlmutter, and then I found out there was a doctor, and then I found out there was a lawyer, and eventually I got the names and was able to use the Freedom of Information Act to get more of the documents, the travel records and the calendar records and the emails, so you really have it there in black and white how these guys were kind of leaning on the actual officials at the VA.
And VA officials are traveling to Mar-a-Lago at taxpayer expense to meet with these three guys?
Yes.
A former administration official said, quote, everyone has to go down and kiss the ring, end quote. What does that mean to you?
Well, that's the dynamic that this sets up. So, I mean, some people compared it to sort of like a board of directors, that these guys acted like they were the corporate board for the VA, and VA officials were the CEO and officers who they were pounding to turn around a struggling company. Where the analogy doesn't go, though, is usually corporate board members are on the board because they have some kind of expertise or insight that they bring to the company. And these guys, none of them has ever served in the U.S. military or U.S. government or has any relevant expertise to veterans' healthcare. The one thing they do have is the attention of the president by virtue of Perlmutter's relationship with Trump.
And again, Perlmutter is the chairman of Marvel Entertainment. He's a longtime acquaintance of Donald Trump.
Yes, and he was a supporter of Trump during the campaign, although he initially supported Rubio. Some people may remember during the primary there was that Fox debate that Trump boycotted, and he counter-programmed with a veterans fundraiser, and Perlmutter was a major donor to that.
Now, these guys declined to be interviewed, but they fielded questions through a crisis communications consultant. And you write that the three men, quote, use their influence in ways that could benefit their private interests, end quote. They responded through a spokesperson by saying that they never sought or received any financial gain for their advice to the VA. Can you elaborate on this? In what ways did they advance their private interests? And what have you found when you follow the money?
Well, there are a few examples where things definitely went into a gray area. One of them is that the VA and the VA secretary at the time last year, David Shulkin, did an event at the New York Stock Exchange around the time of Veterans Day with Marvel and its parent company, Disney. You have this kind of weird visual of Shulkin ringing the closing bell, and two people down, there's Captain America. And it's weird to see a government official kind of promoting a private company that way. And the VA was clearly aware that this raised some ethical questions because they asked an ethics lawyer in the agency for his or her opinion about that. And I don't know what the official said because that was redacted in the document that was released, but clearly they were aware that there was a potential problem here. There's another instance where the doctor, Bruce Moskowitz, was trying to get the VA and Apple to develop an app, and the expert who he brought in to talk to them about this was his own son, who had developed a very similar app. And there was another example, Perlmutter was playing tennis one day, and the woman who manages the tennis court at the luxury community where he lives came up to him and said, "You know, you got to help me. My son is having this problem with his military records." And Perlmutter said, "Oh yeah, you know, I'll take care of it because I'm like helping straighten out the VA." And so he tells Shulkin about this problem and makes a really big deal about it. And Shulkin is in the awkward position of having to say, "You know, this actually isn't a problem with the VA at all. This is a problem with the Department of Defense." So there were all these instances where people, because of their connections to these guys, were getting certain kinds of access to VA officials, much the same way that these guys were getting special access to VA officials because of their relationship with Trump.
And I know you have to go. Two more quick questions. You report that former Trump administration officials say that VA leaders who were at odds with these three guys were pushed out or passed over. A secretary, deputy secretary, chief of staff, acting undersecretary for health, deputy undersecretary for health, chief information officer, director of electronic health records modernization. I mean, this is a huge deal. These people were either pushed out or passed over simply because they were at odds with these three men?
Yeah, that's exactly what you saw, is that people, you know, the answer that these guys give is, "Well, we didn't make anyone do anything. We didn't exercise any direct authority." But what you saw happen is if people didn't get along with them, they pretty soon saw themselves sidelined or out of a job or pushed aside. And so what you had in the time since Shulkin was fired is the leadership of the agency became stacked with people who allied themselves with the Mar-a-Lago crowd. And the situation that you have now is a very tricky one for the new secretary who's coming in and has to navigate this and figure out. He wants to bring in his own people, but he obviously, as his predecessor learned, there are risks to getting on the wrong side of these guys.
How will this experience, or how will these changes affect the experiences of veterans who need care, for example?
That's obviously the big question. And, you know, the major fight in the VA about veterans policy in the Trump era has been about privatization, more specifically about the role of private providers in veterans healthcare. And this was something that was a big was a centerpiece of Trump's campaign, was he wanted to send more veterans to the private sector as opposed to the government-run system. And there's a lot of pushback to that in Congress and from veterans groups in Washington. And the influence of the Mar-a-Lago crowd has been on the side of the private sector. Their idea was to bring in executives from private healthcare organizations to help the VA decide which services to outsource to private providers like themselves. So there was a clear conflict of interest baked into that idea.
And Aaron Glantz, you've been covering veterans for many years. Before we let Isaac go, do you have any questions for him about this report and what he found?
Well, I mean, the main thing that I keep noticing, here we are almost 2 years into the Trump administration, is you've been reporting on this, you know, kitchen cabinet of people who don't know anything about health care. In the meantime, the position of Undersecretary of Health, which is actually in charge of running the health care system, has been vacant this whole time. And I'm just wondering how you see those two dynamics, you know, playing together in the Trump administration.
Well, there's the new person who is in that role on an acting basis is someone who is identified in a memo from December where political appointees in the agency who didn't like Shulkin kind of spelled out how they wanted to remove not only him but many of these other officials and completely change the leadership of the department. So, you know, again, a lot of lawmakers are very concerned by who's running the agency now and the lack of permanent people and who the interim people have been. And there have been three search commissions to find an undersecretary for health, and the White House did not pick any of the names that they provided. So this is certainly an ongoing question of who the leadership is going to be.
Well, Isaac, thank you so much for your reporting, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Isaac Arnsdorf is a reporter with ProPublica covering national politics. He wrote the piece, The Shadow Rulers of the VA, which focuses on three members of Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago Club who are secretly shaping the administration's veterans policies. And as you've heard, none of these guys have ever served in the military or the government, and Democrats say they will investigate. You can read this piece, find it at yourcallradio.org. Aaron Glantz is a senior reporter with Reveal at the Center for Investigative Reporting. Because of Aaron Glantz's reporting, 500,000 fewer military veterans face long waits for disability compensation, while 100,000 fewer vets are prescribed highly addictive narcotics by the government. Aaron is the author of three books, including his most recent, The War Comes Home, Washington's Battle Against America's Veterans. Aaron, when you read this piece, What are your thoughts on this? What really stands out for you?
Well, it's an incredible story, and it put in stark relief what a lot of people have been noticing, that this important resource, you know, this network of 135 hospitals and, you know, hundreds more clinics across the country that are treating our veterans, millions of people every year, has been politicized in a way that it never has been in the history of the government. You know, it used to be that veterans was one of those issues that it didn't matter if you were a Democrat or a Republican, you wanted health care for veterans to be good, right? Mm-hmm. And there was a broad consensus when somebody like me, as an investigative reporter, would come along and point out a problem with the way the VA was operating, that it would be one of those rare issues where Democrats and Republicans would come together and solve it. And that's how we were able to have some of the impact that you mentioned. Now, with Trump, there is a completely new dynamic at play, you know, that Isaac has documented, where the people in charge, you know, are not knowledgeable about health care. Did not serve in the military, have not experienced war, and yet by virtue of their association with Donald Trump and his Mar-a-Lago Club are making policies that affect everyone.
Well, if you are a veteran and you'd like to share your experiences with the VA, we'd love to hear from you. If you work for the VA, what changes are you seeing under Donald Trump? You can call us and remain anonymous, 866-798-8255, or you can email yourcall@kalw.org. You can also tweet at yourcallradio. What are your thoughts about what Aaron just said? Talk a little bit about how the VA became politicized. What changes have you experienced under the VA? Aaron, can you walk us through this? Let's really talk about this. How did the VA become politicized?
I mean, I bring it back to 2014. That's when there was this huge scandal, the VA wait time scandal that was broken by CNN and the Arizona Republic. And some of your listeners may remember it, that the VA was falsifying how long veterans were waiting for appointments. And indeed, especially in Phoenix, a number of veterans died waiting for care. And at that moment, you had this rise of a Koch brothers network of groups that were actively seeking to privatize the VA. The most important one was called Concerned Veterans of America. It was run by a guy named Pete Hegseth, who is now a co-host of Donald Trump's favorite TV show, Fox and Friends. Donald Trump wanted to appoint him Secretary of Veterans Affairs, according to multiple reports. And, you know, veterans groups made it known that they would try to block his nomination. So you had this growth of this pro-privatization AstroTurf group in about 2014 that was incredibly well-funded and, you know, got behind the president. And so that's when we had the introduction of the VA Choice Program, which, you know, has a lot of legitimate aspect. You know, if a veteran has to wait too long to get into the VA, give them a chance to see a private doctor. If they live really far from a VA hospital, give them a chance to see a private doctor. But you had these Koch brothers groups using that as a wedge to kind of get under the tent and then push really hard to turn the VA from this large, generally high quality, government-run healthcare system for our veterans, you know, into, you know, a gravy train program for the private healthcare system. So that's how it started. And now with Trump, it's been kind of combined with the Trumpian circus of corruption that Isaac is reporting on.
When you talk about the Koch brothers and their efforts to privatize the VA, can you talk a bit more about that? What would it mean to privatize the VA?
Well, that's
what changes would they implement?
Well, I mean, what we're starting to see under Trump is, you know, I mentioned this VA Choice Program. So if you've been waiting a long time for an appointment, right, or if you live really far from VA hospital, you're not supposed to get to use private care. And, you know, when he was running for president, Donald Trump said, well, that's not enough. I think that the dollars, the health care dollars, should flow through the veteran. The veteran should basically be able to go wherever they want with taxpayer money to get care. And then you're basically in the same argument that you're in when you talk about public schools or any other government program that has traditionally been a public good that, you know, the people in government want our taxpayer dollars to be following the user of the service instead of building an infrastructure that people can access. And that was what Donald Trump ran on. And so what we see now is that choice program, that private funding, I mean, let's just face it, the private healthcare system in America is incredibly expensive. And the VA, despite its many problems, has dedicated staff that's highly qualified and also operates much more efficiently. And so the private money keeps getting exhausted. The VA goes back to Congress and gets more money for the private care. At the same time, there are more than 30,000 positions at the VA, at the government-run system, that are still vacant. So it's not just the vacancies at the top that Isaac was talking about. You're talking about vacancies for psychiatrists, psychologists, social workers, people to care for our veterans. You're talking about vacancies in the benefits office of people who process disability claims and GI Bill paperwork. All of those, you know, government union jobs, people who care for our veterans within this government health system are because of the mismanagement at the top being left vacant. And at the same time, you have an increasing amount of money going to this private healthcare system to treat our veterans.
Let's talk about some basics, Aaron. How big is the VA?
The VA is the second largest employer in the federal government after the military. So there is nothing in the United States government that is bigger than the VA, you know, from an organizational management point of view. There's about 10 million American veterans who use the VA in more than 100 hospitals across the country. There's also, you know, for example, in the San Francisco healthcare system, it's serving people all the way up almost to the Oregon border. And there's as community clinics in, you know, Santa Rosa and Eureka and all over. And all of these are ours, right? They're ours and they're dedicated staff at all of these places to treat our veterans. And the person in charge of running all that, that job has been vacant the entire time under President Trump. Then there's the benefits part of the VA. This is the part of the VA where if you get hurt in the war and you can't work anymore, then the government will pay you disability benefits so you don't end up homeless. Or if you get old and sick and you need a pension because you serve your country in war and you're poor so you don't become destitute, the VA will give you a pension. There's 58 offices all around the country that manage those claims. And then you have another, you have the GI Bill, you have a network of veteran cemeteries. And, you know, what Isaac is writing about is how the management of all of these essential services for our veterans is being, you know, undercut by this group of people who happen to know Donald Trump through Mar-a-Lago.
And how significant is it that so many crucial jobs are vacant? And have reporters asked administration officials why these jobs haven't been filled?
Yeah, I think it gets mentioned in a sentence in a story every so often that there's, you know, 35,000 jobs that are vacant. But I don't think reporters have done a terribly good job of highlighting this. You know, it should be done on the local level. Reporters should be asking, you know, how many psychiatrist jobs are, you know, unfilled in San Francisco or Palo Alto or Sacramento? How many social worker jobs are unfilled? How many doctors' jobs, nurses' jobs? I mean, a tremendous number of jobs, frontline care professionals, are going unfilled. So if you ask why are veterans facing, you know, long waits for benefits, and there is this long waits for health care, and there is this assumption that there must be some kind of corruption or underfunding, and you know, those, there's equal parts both of those. But what we're seeing under Trump is this neglect is just causing delays to happen. I mean, there's a budget, there's just no doctor to see you because the VA is not hiring them.
Well, hold that thought, Aaron. Aaron Glantz is senior reporter with Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting. He is the author of three books, including The War Comes Home, Washington's Battle Against America's Veterans. And Aaron has been covering the VA and vets for years. Today, we're talking about what it will take to reform the VA and get vets the care they need. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will talk about everyday citizens who are forming groups to protect their communities and provide a range of basic services. How are people organizing to keep communities safe and cared for? Friday, it's our media roundtable. We will talk about NPR's decision to interview Jason Kessler, one of the organizers of the Unite the Right deadly rally in Charlottesville last year, and the rally in D.C., which turned out to be incredibly small. Only about a dozen white supremacists showed up. We will also talk about the massive Monsanto ruling. San Francisco jurors ruled that Roundup, Monsanto's weed killer, gave a California former school groundskeeper terminal cancer. They awarded him $289 million in damages. This is a major ruling. We'll talk about media coverage coming up. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us an email, yourcall@kalw.org. Today, we are talking about what it will take to reform the VA and get veterans the care they need. We are joined by Aaron Glantz, senior reporter with Reveal at the Center for Investigative Reporting. Aaron is author of the book, The War Comes Home, Washington's Battle Against America's Veterans. And let's hear from a few callers. Let's go to Sean in Rohnert Park. Hi, Sean. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. I just wanted to call today and just kind of talk about an incident I had this morning specifically that kind of accentuates the fact that the VA is so chaotic. I am currently trying to get my benefits that should have been to me about any time in the last 2 weeks, and this morning, nothing. I did not get paid, and I called the VA, and I talked to two separate people. And all they did was send me back to the initial auto prompt queue. And I just find it absurd that it's so chaotic. That's pretty much all I want to say. I love the show. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Aaron, do you have any tips for Sean?
Well, you can go to a veteran service officer. You know, the big veterans groups will have this. The county will have this. So if you Google, you know, Sonoma County Veteran Service Officer, you know, you can give them a call. And maybe they can kind of get you an inside line to defeat the bureaucracy. Yeah, the wait time for benefits for your disability checks and other payments like the one the caller is talking about are about the same size as when Donald Trump took over.
And is this, are you hearing this from other veterans?
This is a thing, this was much worse, you know, 5 years ago. The VA has substantially got its act together on the benefits side, but there's still hundreds of thousands of veterans who are waiting for benefits.
Well, we'll find some resources and put those at yourcallradio.org. Let's go next to Phil in Redwood City. Hi, Phil. Welcome to the show.
Hi. You can hear me?
Hi. Yes. Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I've been with the VA since 2003. Overall, it's a marvelous place. I've gone to emergency for breaking bones and this and that. But the sleep, I don't have a sleep disorder license pulled.
Sorry. And then sorry, Phil. You're cutting out.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yeah. Let's try it now. Go ahead.
Okay. So they had my license pulled. The DMV gave me back, but 8 years later, they still have me a different disease. They didn't explain why they decided that I have syncope. I don't have it, and it cost the losing my license. My income went down by like $15,000 in 3 months, and I have had Inspector General report. They believe the lies of the doctors. I've had Anna Eshoo and Jackie Speer in 8 years just trying to get a correct diagnosis of my condition and to actually get some admission of you know, that they have, you know, like even the doctor's visits at the sleep clinic, they start out yelling, they don't even say hello. And 8 years later, I mean, I still relive this every day. And my PTSD happened in a hospital, not in combat when I was in Vietnam. So, it's very difficult to find someone, one advocate. Because I've gone to Congress people, gone to the Inspector General, and the directors, two directors there, have just totally sided with the doctors, and they don't talk to the doctors that counter the false statements. It's
wow,
good.
I'm sorry to hear this, Phil. Aaron, do you have any advice for Phil?
Well, it sounds like Phil is already doing many of the things that I would suggest. You know, he's gone to his member of Congress, and they're working with him. So that gets you a voice. I mean, the VA is a fantastic healthcare system, but it's also a large bureaucracy, and it's not uncommon to have people trapped in some kind of bureaucratic problem like this that has a real negative impact on their life. One thing that the VA is really good at that might be helpful is, you know, to get your whole, I mean, have you gotten your whole electronic medical record?
I got it all.
Yeah, I mean, so that you should be able to use that as documentary evidence with whoever you're talking to help them better understand the situation. And you know, that's often a great resource. If the person in front of you doesn't quite understand what you're talking about, you can just say, here it is right here.
No, I detailed it very, very carefully, quoting everything from my record, and they just ignore it. So it's beyond... I'm not sure what I'm going to do. I think I have your name. I'd like to get someone who can look at my case and say, hey, that's not right.
Well, thank you for calling, Phil, and good luck with everything. Aaron, is there like an advocate, a group of advocates that could help someone like Phil?
Well, I mean, again, Phil is already talking to his member of Congress, which is always a good idea because they're, you know, their constituent service reps, especially the members that he talked about, tend to be very knowledgeable on dealing with the VA and have the correct phone numbers. I mean, there's also advocacy groups like, you know, Swords to Plowshares, and the county will have these veteran service officers who are experienced at dealing with this VA bureaucracy and, you know, some of the problems that people have. You know, this, the kind of frustration that we're hearing from the caller is one reason why, you know, there's a welcoming of Donald Trump's call for vouchers, you know, amongst many veterans, is that people do get frustrated. They want to be able to go somewhere else. You know, it's like I was talking earlier about the debate about vouchers in schools and how it's similar. You know, people... Mm-hmm. You know, if we don't deal with the real problems in our public schools, then our public schools will be undermined. And if we don't deal with the real problems in the VA, then the VA will be undermined. And if you have a president like Donald Trump who's leaving key positions vacant and, you know, putting people in charge who don't really know what they're talking about, that does trickle all the way down, you know, to the particular healthcare facility in San Francisco or Santa Rosa or Palo Alto that that any given veteran is going to.
Well, thank you again for calling in, Phil, and good luck with everything. Aaron, what about going to a completely different VA clinic and starting from scratch with new doctors and new advocates? Is that allowed? Can people do that?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So maybe, Phil, you can do that. I'm dealing with the healthcare situation right now for a loved one, and I feel your pain, Phil. It's so hard to navigate. And this is just one person of thousands. I mean, Aaron, when you look, because you've reported so extensively on this, everybody has a different story. I'm sure every center has obviously different doctors, different people working there. Are certain VA clinics more, you know, well-equipped to deal with issues and long wait times than others? What does it look like, depending on where you live in this country?
The VA's kind of historic problem is that it's very uneven, right? So the San Francisco VA, for example, is affiliated with UCSF, right? So basically, if you have some kind of complicated medical problem, you go to the San Francisco VA, you get some of the best doctors in the world, right? And the same thing is true of the VA in Palo Alto. You get Stanford doctors, right? Regular, ordinary, you know, people get to be cared for by, you know, people who are writing the major academic papers on certain diseases, you know, that are unique to the war and combat experience. Then you end up, the VA's problem has always been that, you know, let's say that you live in Western Wisconsin, You know, you're not lucky enough to live near Stanford University or Columbia University. You live in one of the other, you know, most of the country where veterans live in. And, you know, our warfighting force, with the lack of a draft, is increasingly rural, increasingly southern, and there's not the same kind of healthcare infrastructure, you know, of educated professionals in those communities. And so, you know, I did a huge investigation about the doping of veterans in the VA in western Wisconsin. And typically the VA, when we published our investigation and Congress got involved, they dealt with the problem. They fired the chief of staff of the hospital who was, you know, over-medicating veterans with dangerous narcotics. There's a new team in charge there. The whole facility is turned around. But you really need attentive leadership at the top that's engaged in monitoring all these, you know, healthcare centers around the country, or you end up with, you know, people building their own little fiefdoms, making veterans' lives miserable on the taxpayer dime. And so, you know, what really concerns me about Trump is, you know, the push towards privatization and at the same time the inattention, you know, to the existing system we have, because when you have that inattention, that's when problems develop.
Aaron Glantz is a senior reporter with Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting. He's the author of The War Comes Home, Washington's Battle Against America's Veterans. And today we are talking about the VA, what it will take to reform it, what are we seeing under Donald Trump. If you have any questions or comments, if you're a veteran and you have personal experience with the VA, if you work at the VA, we'd love to hear from you. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can email your call at kalw.org or tweet us at your call radio. Aaron, let's talk about some of the changes that we have seen. Let's talk about George W. Bush, Barack Obama, and then Donald Trump. What really stands out for you? Because, like you say, this has become politicized, and especially under George W., we heard support the troops, support the troops. The yellow ribbons were on all the cars, right? But at the time, a lot of explosive reports came out about the same problems that we're still facing. So what strikes you about the changes you've seen under those three administrations?
I think you have to, first of all, when you ask that question, remind yourself that America has been at war now for 17 years, that we are in the longest war in our history, and that there are people graduating high school this coming year who were not even born on 9/11/2001, right? And that we've had millions of Americans fight in these wars. And so when you ask me about Bush, Obama, and now Trump, under President Bush, there were many lies about the war in Iraq. And one of them was that the war would be easy and cheap and quick and nobody would get hurt. And so part of that was there was no planning. There was no staffing up of doctors and psychiatrists and nurses and others to treat people who would be coming home hurt from that war. And, you know, some of your listeners may remember the Walter Reed scandal that happened, where the military hospital that was just a few miles from the White House was falling apart, and say nothing of, you know, veterans hospitals out in the all around the country. So, you know, when President Obama was running for office, and we had been at war at that point for about 7 years, he promised to deal with this problem, and he made a variety of very aggressive public statements about the need to address long wait times that had begun to manifest themselves under President Bush, and waits for both health care and benefits. And then he dropped the ball, right? He said all the right things. He went to Congress, and he got a lot of money. But then investigative reporters like myself started looking around about halfway through the Obama administration, saying, well, are things actually better? And the fact of the matter was that wait times had gotten worse. On the benefits side, there were a million veterans waiting for benefits. And then on the healthcare side, we had the VA wait time scandal in 2014. Obama, generally speaking, tended to be pretty responsive to these scandals and try to address them, but only after they became scandals, right? He very little proactive management. And so that bred a lot of frustration, you know, like a lot of things with President Obama. People had a lot of hope in the beginning that he would fix a problem that was the legacy of the Bush administration. And by the end of his term, the problem was still not fixed. There was incredible frustration and anger amongst many veterans. And you know, President Trump, even though he dodged the draft in the Vietnam War, even though he had mocked people with post-traumatic stress disorder, even though he had denigrated John McCain, he did incredibly well in the veterans vote. Veterans voted for him almost 2-1 and likely delivered him the presidency by those margins in states like Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, which were decided by very narrow margins, where there are also a lot of veterans. And it was a vote of anger, you know. They just wanted, you know, he said it on the campaign trail, Trump did, that he would fire everybody. That's one way. I will fire everybody if I'm elected. So so now a lot of these veterans who kind of voted to blow everything up because they were so upset, they're seeing in many cases the negative aspect of that decision.
That is so interesting because, as you remember, Aaron, on the campaign trail, Donald Trump slammed the Bush administration over and over for invading Iraq. I mean, he sounded in some ways more anti-war than a lot of the Democrats, at least on the campaign trail.
Yeah, I mean, I think that when you look at, well, I interviewed a whole bunch of veterans who voted for Trump who surprised me because these were people, I mean, obviously a lot of veterans are conservative and Republican, right? And then, and they're going to vote for the Republican. But then, you know, the veterans vote is usually split about 55-45 in favor of the Republican. And in this election, the exit polls showed it was like 65-30. Right, a huge spread for Trump. And, you know, so I just posted on Facebook the day after the election, like, you know, if you're a veteran and you voted for Trump, get in touch with me. And I got many people who voted for Bernie Sanders in the primary who ended up voting for Trump. You know, people were angry at Hillary. You know, Hillary voted for the war, right? Hillary had been associated in this very general way with the establishment that had not taken care of veterans, right, over this long period of war. And people were angry and they're ready for some kind of change. And they didn't think that much about what that change would be. So you know, Donald Trump was angry. They were angry. They voted for Trump. And that's in many ways how we ended up where we are today.
Wow. So what do veterans think about what's happening right now? For example, this Mission Act, which Trump signed last month. And according to the Washington Post, it consolidates 7 programs allowing vets to obtain private or community health care coordinated by the VA. The Wall Street Journal reports that the VA now outsources more than 1/3 of appointments into the private sector. What do vets think about these issues? What's their experience been so far?
Well, you have a lot of veterans, you know, like your caller, who are very frustrated with the VA system and are welcoming private care. And that's one reason why the VA keeps burning through the money to pay for private care, right? Because veterans are asking for it. On the other hand, you see the big veterans groups like the American Legion, the VFW, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, Vietnam Veterans of America, who are really scared about where all of this is going, right? They don't want they want the VA to be strong for the next generation, right? They want this giant public health system where, you know, all academic studies show that health outcomes are better with the VA than the private sector. Almost all academic studies. They want to preserve this, right? And as a journalist, I get worried. You know, you mentioned at the outset that, you know, veterans, you know, the VA was over-medicating veterans with narcotics in our opioid epidemic. After this was exposed, now the VA is a national leader in making sure that veterans are not over-medicated with narcotics and are not at risk of overdose and addiction. What about that private healthcare system when people go with their voucher? Does the VA have adequate controls in place to make sure that those doctors are not quacks, right? Right. I mean, these are the questions that the veterans groups are asking, right? As individual veterans, you know, just try to deal with their own healthcare issues.
And this particular bill it's a $55 billion program.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of money is incredible because you're talking about healthcare for, you know, 20 million American veterans, you know, about 10 million of them are enrolled in the VA system.
And Aaron, so we're clear about money. Trump just signed a $717 billion military bill. But veterans care is separate from that bill, right?
Right. I mean, the VA is totally separate from the military. So,
right.
You know, if you are in the military, you're going to be getting health care through the military health care system, and it's going to be part of that budget. Then you're going to get discharged from the military at some point, and then you're going to get treated from the Department of Veterans Affairs. So, you know, there's all kinds of, you know, ongoing talk is the why can't the military and the VA have healthcare computer systems that talk to each other. You know, that's like one of these like ongoing scandals that is still happening now.
Wow, still happening. So we have driverless cars, but they don't talk. But certain departments in the VA, they don't have the technology to talk to each other.
Yeah, and in the meantime, you know, we have the president setting up a meeting, you know, with the kid of one of his friends who designed an Apple app.
Wow. Well, we have time to take a couple more calls. Let's go to Brad in San Francisco. Hi, Brad. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me. You answered two of my questions already in the last few minutes. However, I would still like to know then what the various groups are doing, veterans groups are doing, in order to get the message out and inform their membership that they're going to have to once again come out in this October election if they want to have a hope of stopping Trump from changing the administration into a privatization format that will cause them great harm.
Well,
yeah,
thank you for the call. Go ahead, Aaron.
Yeah, we haven't yet seen these groups come out swinging, right? Mm-hmm. You know, they express concern. Right. When a report like Isaac's come up, they release a statement saying they're worried that there are 30,000 healthcare positions vacant. But they haven't really come out swinging against the president. They're nonpartisan organizations. So, you know, it's really going to be up to veterans themselves to organize politically if that's what you want to do.
Thank you, Brad. We have another question from Ruthann about privatization. Hi, Ruthann.
Hi, good morning. I know that both of your expertise is in the VA and VA healthcare, but I was interested in knowing if either of you think there are any parallels between the efforts to privatize the VA and the efforts to privatize Medicare.
Well, it's kind of interesting. I think that the idea with the VA is to make it a little bit more like Medicare, you know, to turn it from a healthcare system to social insurance, right? You get your Medicare is money that is paid by the government to a private doctor usually, right? And so that's what privatization means in the VA context.
Oh. Thank you, Ruthann. Thanks for calling. Aaron, we have a couple minutes left. Since you have spent so many years covering the VA, what changes do you think, based on all of the people you've interviewed, need to happen to ensure that veterans get the care they need from the VA?
I just think that the government needs to be focused on accountability, you know, and managing this healthcare system well. In my experience, before this Trump period, when there was a bipartisan consensus that care should be good, when problems were pointed out, the government tried to address them, right? The people in charge of that Wisconsin hospital that I reported on are no longer in charge. Staff has been hired. It's now a great hospital, right? Mm-hmm. So So that's what we need. It's like when President Obama says that he's going to improve the VA, but then, you know, appoints General Shinseki and just assumes it's taken care of, that's when things start to falter, right? We need a president who is engaged and cares about the performance of the VA in a positive way, in the same way that they would care about the performance of any other part of the government, with focus and intelligence and integrity. And, you know, we haven't had that in the previous administrations, and now we're confronted with a new challenge, which is a president who kind of actively wants to dismantle it.
Well, we see that these three men in this piece, according to...
We've lost our transmission from Gronert Park. This has been Your Call. We'll be back this time tomorrow at 10 o'clock here on 91.7 KALW.